All right, well, I am fortunate today to be presenting with my community partner, Ms. Linda Riggins, and graduate student, Ms. Mamie Carlson. And I was a Kellogg Health Scholar from 2010 to 2012 at University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And this work is based on what we started there and is continuing there. And we're really excited to share some of our findings. We also have our team members in the audience who are on the side as well, Dr. Alex Lightfoot, Mr. Melvin Jackson, and Tamara Tack. So we're going to get right into it. We have no relationships to disclose. So just to kind of give some general background, I'm sure you all are aware that there are significant HIV disparities experienced by African Americans, and this is nationally across the country and has been persistent over time. We are really focused on African American youth, and among those youth, although nationally they make up 15% of the population, they account for 69% of HIV/AIDS diagnoses. These disparities are also present in Wake County, where we do our work, where African-American adolescents make up 58% of HIV/AIDS diagnoses, despite only representing 20.5% of the population. So there are alarming and persistent disparities, and that's really where our work comes in, trying to figure out how can we address these disparities in a way that's really going to last. So there's really a need to have culturally relevant and sustainable interventions, and that's really been the focus of our work. So speaking of that, faith-based organizations present a tremendous opportunity when we think of HIV prevention, and one that often people maybe don't think of because of some of the issues we'll talk about in terms of some issues that you need to work through. But in terms of all of the strengths that African-American faith-based organizations bring, they have a long history of promoting youth development. So this is through programs, for being a resource for the community, a place that people go and trust when working with their children. And so we are really excited about building on these strengths. In addition, faith leaders have been health advocates and sources of social support for their communities for years. And so this is something where they're established, they're recognized as being this resource for the community and for youth. In particular, we are really interested and excited to use participatory methods because other studies have found that using these methods with African-American faith-based organizations are really effective when you're doing intervention development and implementation research. In particular, because there's a real emphasis on the uptake of the intervention, so making sure that it's really accepted into the setting. It improves the design and the fit of the intervention, so is it appropriate, is it relevant? And that is really also important in terms of sustainability. And then also really promoting ownership, so developing partnerships so that this work it really lasts and it's something that we're all sharing. So in terms of our particular study, this was formative work of a larger CBPR study that was a partnership between Strengthen the Black Family, which is a community-based organization in Raleigh, North Carolina, and the UNC Center for Health Promotion and Disease Prevention. And this study has been really exciting to be a part of. It's really grown and continues to grow, but really focused on implementing and evaluating an evidence-based HIV prevention program for African-American youth in faith-based settings. So that's really our focus. And what we wanted to do is really have a better understanding of faith leaders' experiences and perceptions of the role that FBOs could play and the role that faith leaders can play in HIV prevention. So we really thought there were a lot of opportunities there and a lot of things that we could build from that maybe we didn't currently have an understanding of. And so we wanted to understand both barriers to engaging in HIV prevention, but also facilitators and where we could really build on strengths. So just to give a little bit of background about our community advisory board, so they guided our study as well as the larger CBPR study, and it was really meant to guide not only the study itself, but what we do with the research. So how is this research translated into action in the community? We're really fortunate to have a very diverse intergenerational group of stakeholders on our community advisory board. So we had parents, we had youth, faith leaders that had a variety of perspectives, academic researchers, and it was really important that we did have that variety of perspectives and experiences because we didn't want everyone to be like in agreement, this is what we should do, you know, one sort of plan, but really we wanted to have dialogue and talk about all the issues, some of the barriers and all of this, all the things we could build on. So that was really important to us. And they, for our particular study, helped us develop our interview guide and have been involved throughout the whole process, really as we've been talking about themes and what do these really mean, refining our themes. Our CAB has been instrumental in that and then really talking about how can we use this. And so what we did was conducted semi-structured interviews with 20 African-American faith leaders that were recruited from 5 different churches. So we wanted to get a range of churches, denominations. And again, we're really focused on understanding experiences, perceptions, and challenges that faith-based organizations and faith leaders face in engaging in youth HIV prevention. And we had a great interview team that had community and academic interviewers. We were all trained together. And it was really important that we selected people that were familiar with the culture and customs of the Black church in Wake County, because we really wanted to make sure that we had a culturally humble approach and that we were really able to kind of get in there with respect and being open to what we were hearing. All the interviewers were formally trained and certified in human subjects research training, and the interviews lasted from about an hour to an hour and a half, so we did have a range. Our interview questions were really focused on faith leaders' values, beliefs, and experiences, so we weren't really looking for like one right answer about this is what you should do. We wanted to understand more about the context and their experiences and how we could, again, build on that.
So our analysis process was using a CBPR approach. It involved two academic partners, Dr. Woods Jaeger and myself, and then also our community partner, Linda. And through this process, our coding team actually developed our coding scheme using a conventional content analysis approach, where the codes were actually directly derived from the data. We met systematically to cover these different themes and then translated those into categories and themes. To do this process, we actually did a parallel data analysis where I took all 20 interviews and looked at them as one single case of the context there, and Linda actually looked at each individual interview as a case in and of itself. Then we came together with those two different perspectives and talked through to how if we were seeing the same things and those kinds of things, and sorting out our categories, and also working on our code book, which, as we all know, for qualitative researchers, this is a working document and is ever-changing. Once again, once we felt that we had these solid themes, we took them back to the Community Advisory Board, and their feedback was actually incorporated into the finalized themes. As far as participant demographics, we had about an even amount of males and females, 11 and 9. 60% of them were married, 75% had children, and there was a range of church affiliation, with the highest being 40% of our 20% participants were Baptist. There was a range of church years in the church, ranging from a couple of years to several decades. Since we were looking, our research questions aimed to explore the role of faith-based leaders and also faith-based organizations in HIV prevention, and also looking at facilitators and themes or barriers. The three primary facilitator themes that we identified through the data was church as a trusted resource, which we defined as faith leaders identified African-American faith-based organizations as a trusted community resource and provider of health information and services and programs. The second theme was church call, and this was defined as faith leaders expressed that African-American faith-based organizations having a calling or responsibility to address the needs of the congregation and also the broader community, which was actually an interesting piece for HIV prevention through their mission and activities. And then lastly was biblical guidance, and this we defined as multiple faith leaders describing the use of biblical guidance for addressing youth HIV risk, and I'll talk about those a little bit more in depth. One participant said, give them a mentor that they could talk to, somebody with young people, that somebody they can trust, that they can talk to openly without anybody knowing all over the community that he or she is doing that, he or she has done that. And basically this was getting at the Black church being such a trusted resource meant that people were coming for education, information, mentorship, those kinds of things, which really well positions the Black church to be an active or key player in HIV prevention. Secondly, the second primary theme, church call, participant said, raising up kids in the way that they should behave and what they should know about certain things. It's not about selling them short and giving the information they need to survive, to go out and for the future, to live today and tomorrow. They got to learn it, and I believe we at the church, we are believing in them and that we are trying to train them to do just that. So beyond this idea of responsibility to the congregation was also to the broader community, and this idea of being one's like brother or sister's keeper, and how that translates into the mission activities of the Black church. And even above that, this idea of setting these high expectations for the youth, and then in turn, like what is the church's place in supporting them to meet the youth meeting those expectations. And then lastly, for facilitators, is biblical guidance. One participant said, when Christ taught the disciples, he didn't say, well, I want you all to be just like me. He always taught them that they wanted to do better, to strive for highs and deeper depths and greater things. And that's what we try to instill in our youth as well. Just because we did those things, they were mistakes. And instead, we learn to learn to abstain from our mistakes. We're coming to be a better people, so we choose you all to be that greater. And so this, once again, is there's this idea of this contradiction between, like, biblical teachings potentially and comprehensive HIV prevention, which Linda will talk about a little bit more in depth. But this idea that you're moving beyond the biblical principles and how that may inform your messages and how this is actually a way to inform how you actually engage youth and the broader community, and also, once again, this expectation piece about how do we hold them up and the youth, and like how do we assist them in meeting these higher expectations.
So here we have three very significant and somewhat controversial things related to barriers that emerge. This silence is where many faith leaders really describe to us this overall aversion to discussing, even acknowledging, HIV within the community, the home, and especially the Black church. And then there's the tension between comprehensive HIV prevention and church teachings. So here faith leaders again describe to us that this tension existed between the evidence which suggests that comprehensive HIV prevention is necessary along with the beliefs regarding abstinence. And then thirdly, unhealthy influences and pressures that encourage risk-taking. So here faith leaders let us know that youth do encounter all types of unhealthy and negative pressures all the time, messages everywhere, in their home, in the church, in the community. Okay, so let's look closely at the silence surrounding HIV. One of the pastors said, there's just been a void in that area. I've been in this particular church where I am for almost 16 years. That's an area that we just don't know a lot about. There hasn't been seminars, or we haven't had people come in to talk about it to the church. So it's a big sort of void, and I think it's something that's really needed. The church needs to be more involved in that process. So what's going on here? It's just time out for that, you know, that taboo tendency, like hush-hush about HIV. It's time for some open and honest dialogue. I'm talking about deep discussion and hands-on activities right at the church regarding effective HIV prevention. And then this great pastor said about this tension that's going on. You know, we have struggled trying to determine whether or not telling folk the proper way is condoning sex. And I'm talking about with youth here now. How does the church engage or encourage safer sex versus no sex? We know it's going to happen for the most part. So then, what do we say? Do we stick our heads in the sand and act like it's not happening, or do we address? So, okay, young people, if you're going to do this, then this is what you need to do. So right here, we just encourage you to hear and even see that actual tug of war that's going on. Actually, it's like court is in session. You have research versus religion. And the pastors are aware of that. So we do know that the place for the church to teach, preach, and encourage abstinence, you know, that's right, that's appropriate. But we can't reject the research. So what the faith leaders are saying is that help us, please, what messages will complement our traditional teachings so me, the pastor, will not feel guilty about compromising the church, things like that. And then thirdly, we have these unhealthy influences and that negative peer pressure. I think the culture that the adolescent youth are in, that's a challenge to our youth today. to come away from just what everybody else is doing and live healthy, mind, body, and spirit, and the soul. And the church's responsibility is to do more of that with the youth, and I think we're working on it, but there's a long way to go with that. And then you have that peer pressure. Peer pressure is, I think, is the biggest challenge that they have, because youth, just like to belong, to feel like they are part of something. And so right here, those faith leaders are not running from their responsibility to be this positive influence for the youth. What's going on is that the youth are run over with influences. I mean, they can't even hardly watch TV, listen to their music without all these messages about sex. So what the faith leaders are saying, again, help us. We acknowledge the attention. People want the adolescents' attention, and the faith leaders are trying to find their place in giving them the proper attention.
So in terms of implications and next steps, what we found from this formative work was that African-American faith-based organizations are well-positioned to have a significant role in HIV prevention. So we talked about them being a trusted resource, being a place that people really go to for this type of information and support, particularly with youth. But what's important is that we learn and really dialogue and have discussion about how we can integrate HIV prevention within the church, building on strengths of the church and facilitators that we talked about, such is the church's call to respond to community needs and biblical guidance, which I think was really interesting because, as was talked about, often we think of biblical guidance being maybe counter to HIV prevention. But the faith leaders we talked with really mentioned how that informs how they approach youth, the need to be compassionate, the need to really engage with youth, not leaving anybody out, even if they're not doing exactly what you want them to be doing. So really thinking about how can we build on that in terms of really thinking about HIV prevention. And then really what came through with our faith leaders was that it's critical to support them in taking active steps in HIV prevention. So doing more than just telling them that they need to be more involved, telling them what the statistics are, you know, but really supporting them and having a partnership and how do we really address this issue. So that could be providing HIV prevention resources. Many of them talked about, you know, again, we don't have seminars, we don't have the pamphlets, we don't have the information. So really thinking about how can we provide that in an accessible way, but also really thinking about facilitating communication, and this is communication across levels, so between faith leaders and researchers, between faith leaders and health educators, faith leaders and themselves, and really between youth and adults within the church. In addition, we were really focused on HIV prevention, but they talked about a variety of pressures and negative influences that youth face and the need to really attack these head on. So there was definitely an awareness among the faith leaders that these were issues that affected the youth in their congregations and the youth in the community. But what was sort of missing or what they really were calling for was more of an active, direct approach. So being really frank about it and getting in there on the ground and working towards solutions. And then also really involving youth in the process. And this is something that we've been really excited about. Some of our other formative work has really been engaging youth and coming up with solutions, and really then how do we work together with faith leaders to implement those solutions. And so we just want to acknowledge we had so many people that were a big part of the study. So all of the faith leaders, our community advisory board, we had incredible community interviewers who also transcribed the interviews and were really involved throughout the process. Graduate students, Lene Warren, who did a lot of the transcribing and helping us really get things going, as well as the president of Strengthening the Black Family, and Dr. Jean Ng, our mentor at UNC. And then I really want to thank personally the Kellogg Health Scholars Program. This was a tremendous opportunity and experience for me being part of this program. I'm so excited to be continuing all the work that started in my time during the program, and so I just definitely want to mention that it was definitely a career and life-changing experience for me. And then here's some references.